Hello and welcome to the Connected Community Podcast. Today, my guest is Angie Barrett, and we talk about healing trauma through play. Angie's message here is that healing our trauma doesn't have to be so hard and heavy. It can be playful, it can be fun, and there can be laughter and joy involved in that process. Angie was a childhood sexual abuse survivor, and it wasn't until 8 years ago that all of that began to manifest. She was working in the intensive care unit as a registered nurse. She was teaching yoga. She was a longtime yoga practitioner, and she was absolutely overwhelmed with everything that was coming up for her. She then went into a trauma-informed yoga teacher training. It was that when she learned that she could pair play and movement to heal trauma. This is how she healed her own trauma, and this is how she works with her clients to heal their trauma. When we move and we pair that with play, that regulates our nervous system and calms down our nervous system. And we talk about the polyvagal theory and how this is scientifically backed. I also want to say that trauma doesn't have to be something big and heavy like emotional abuse, physical trauma, things like that. It can be life. Life has a way of layering these things onto us and building up in our body. It's not until we release these things out of our body and get rid of them that we create space in our body for love and light to enter, for that energy to enter, and for that negative energy to be released. So I want to thank you all so much for being here today. Please, if you're enjoying these podcasts, give us a like, a share, and a subscribe. And I'm going to hop on in with my episode with Angie today. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome to the Connected Community Podcast, a place to explore possibility through mindfulness, movement, and self-discovery. Our intention is to deliver insight and inspiration while fostering conversations that are genuine, unfiltered, and deeply human. We hope you will enjoy today's episode. Hi, Angie. How are you today?
I'm good, Nikki. How are you?
Good. I want to thank you so much for coming on to the Connected Community Podcast. I'm very excited to chat with you today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So you are an intuitive movement coach, an advanced trauma-informed yoga instructor. You have a background as a registered nurse and your stand-up paddleboard yoga teacher, which is so diverse and fun, and I'm absolutely loving this. And what attracted me most to you and your story is that you are using the component of play to heal from trauma, which is different than almost everybody else that I've worked with on my podcast. And I love this. And so let's just kind of just dive right in and talk about how you got to this place of working with play. Because I know you were a registered nurse and you left that path and completely transformed your trajectory professionally. So can we talk about how that progression happened with you?
Yes, that is going to start way back when I was a child. So that gets into a little bit of my history, how I got involved in this. So I am a child abuse survivor. My abuse started when I was actually very young, happened at church by friends of my parents without my parents' knowledge. And it went on for many years. And my abuse was so significant that I actually blocked it out. I had no memory of it until about 8 years ago because it was just too much. I couldn't even process it. So I made it through. I went to college. I got married. I became a registered nurse. And I actually ended up marrying someone who was abusive. So I went through an abusive marriage. Typically, those of us who experience childhood trauma also tend to repeat those patterns until we heal them. And but one great thing is that I graduated college as a registered nurse. And interestingly enough, I worked in, most of my nursing career was spent in emergency departments and ICUs. I thrived on chaos and I didn't understand why. When things were calm and peaceful, I felt unsafe, so I thrived on the chaos, and yet that still created more trauma inside of me. So I ultimately divorced my husband, and about 8 years ago, I had been dating someone new, and I found out that they were cheating on me. They made a post on Facebook that they were now involved in a new relationship while we were still together. Mm-hmm. And so that betrayal by my partner unlocked the memories of my childhood trauma. So I started dealing with these dueling traumas and I hit rock bottom. I had to actually take a break from nursing because the chaos of living in emergency department, ICU, critical care became too much, with also still dealing with the traumas that I was now having to face, both my childhood trauma and my partner cheating on me. So I took a break from nursing and I needed something to do while I was taking that break. And I've always practiced yoga. I've been a yoga student for many, many years. And the yoga studio I practiced at was offering a yoga teacher training. And I thought I needed something to do with my mind and my body since I was taking a break from nursing. So I became a yoga instructor and I loved it. I loved the change in pace. I loved being able to work with people more proactively rather than reactively. It gave me a sense of peace. I wasn't living in the chaos of the emergency department. And then yoga actually became too much for me. I couldn't practice it myself anymore. As I was healing on my journey from these significant traumas, yoga and experiencing the sensory information, even in a yoga class, became too much. It became too confined, too constricting. I could teach it. I just could no longer become a student. And it became really challenging.
What was happening to you? Was it a physiological response?
It was. My system was going into overwhelm and shutdown. And I wanted to peel my skin off as I was practicing in a yoga class, which was the exact opposite of what yoga is supposed to do. Right.
Yeah.
I couldn't. So one of the things from my childhood is I can't cry, or I've been unable to cry because my abusers did not like when I cried. And so it was trained out of me. And so I couldn't express emotions. And so all these emotions were coming up while I was practicing yoga and I had no way to let them out. And so it just made me, I would pick at my skin. And that became unhealthy. So I stopped practicing as a student. And then I had this big loss because I was missing out on that mind-body practice.
Yeah.
And fast forward a couple of years, I could teach it because I was not fully experiencing. I wasn't fully allowing myself to experience it because I had to stay disconnected enough to be able to teach the class.
Yeah.
And then I took a trauma-informed yoga instructor training. A friend of mine who knew I had PTSD, knew I had childhood trauma, was taking this trauma-informed yoga instructor training and asked if I wanted to. And that opened up things for me. Teaching trauma-informed yoga and practicing trauma-informed yoga actually made it so that I could start to practice yoga again and have a mind-body practice. There were some differences in the way that, or there are some differences in the way that trauma-informed yoga is taught.
What are the differences? Before I'm really curious because I'm a yoga teacher.
Yes.
And I have a little bit of that. I have an MSW, so I have a little of that background. But what are the significant differences between a regular yoga class and a trauma-informed class?
The biggest difference that I noticed was in trauma-informed yoga, there's space to allow for anything to happen. And traditional, more structured yoga doesn't have that space. And I'll give you an example. So breath work for me is very triggering, actually, to sit in breath work because it takes me back to flashbacks. So a common cue in trauma-informed yoga would be flowing with the breath or at whatever rhythm feels comfortable to you. So you don't have to actually move with the breath. Whereas in traditional yoga, it is more on an inhale, move here, on an exhale, move here. So there's more focus on the breath. There is more, one of the big differences is play. Play is a way to help us allow for sensory experience without the mental story associated with the sensory information that comes up. So play, we actually did a lot of play in trauma-informed yoga. So that became kind of my wheelhouse, which is how one of the ways that I got really into play. One of my instructors would teach us, we would have whole movement practices rolling around on the floor. So we would still do yoga moves, but you would do tree pose on the floor. And so to experience feeling those moves, but feeling it from the support of laying on the floor. So there just is much more space to experience things. And a lot of times it's more of a sensory exploration. So there would be questions like, where do you feel it? Do you feel all four corners of your feet? If you don't feel your feet, do you feel it in your legs? Do you feel it in the front of your leg? Do you feel it in the back of your leg? Rather than a more directed cueing of you know, ground into all four corners of your feet, lengthen up. It's where do you feel it? What does it feel like? Does it feel pressure? Do you feel, so it's more of a sensory exploration than a more, traditional yoga in my mind is a more directed movement practice. There's a little more structure to it. Trauma-informed yoga, there's less structure and it's a more sensory experience.
But why was the one triggering for you and the other one wasn't? What was the significant thing that was triggering you in the regular yoga practice that wasn't in the other practice?
Traditional yoga is much more structured. And based on my experience as a child abuse survivor, I lived a very structured, I had very set things that had to be done. And so the structure became too much. And also, some of it was ego. When I would get triggered in a traditional yoga class, I didn't feel like I had the space to curl up in a ball and just lay in child's pose or shavasana. And that was my own impression. And in trauma-informed yoga, there is a lot more directed cueing for when you need to take a break, take a break. If you want to curl up in fetal position the entire time, curl up in fetal position the entire time. So it was more... there's more permission to experience whatever comes up for you. And the language and the cueing is very different. Trauma-informed yoga, there's a lot of emphasis on understanding the nervous system. And so we got really heavy into understanding people's nervous systems. And so cueing becomes different when you're teaching from a trauma-informed lens and knowing that not everyone's going to respond the same way versus a more traditional class.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it sounds like the regular one's more rigid. The boundaries are more solid. There's not as much freedom of movement or expression or ability to kind of take care of yourself.
I use the term structured instead of rigid, but yes, that, you know, it is. It's a much more structured way of going. Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I forgot where we were before I interrupted you.
Me too. Right. So play is a big part of trauma-informed yoga. And so I was learning how powerful play was in actually tapping into parts of our nervous system for healing. And at the same time, my therapist, I'm in intensive therapy, my therapist started a protocol with me that is designed for people who experience trauma at a young age. And so they have no idea of what safety really is. And I learned that all mammals, and by the way, humans are mammals, we come out with our brains pre-wired with 7 circuits. So we know 7 things when we come out as infants. And play is one of those things that we come out knowing. So if you think of how puppies learn, how babies learn, you know, we play hide and seek. So I was learning about the power of play in these two different, very different arenas. And so I started practicing play in my own body. And what I mean by play, I get asked that a lot. So play, and so then my nursing brain kicked in and I wanted to go research it. What exactly is play? What does it mean? What defines play? And play is something that is done with no real objective in mind. It's done for the pure joy of doing it. Play, I link play and movement together. There are things like playing video games that can be enjoyable, that kind of stuff. Play and movement are where the real combination comes in because you're finding ways to tap into the sensory experiences coming up in your body. And I'll give you an example. So one of my negative beliefs that I grew up with based on my child abuse is I have to be small. If I'm big, I'm not safe. And so I started pretending like I was an elephant and I would stomp around my house and I would get to feel what it felt like to be big, to experience the sensation of being an elephant. And I didn't have the mental story associated with it's not safe because elephants are big, they're powerful. They'll, you know, push things out of their way. Other animals are afraid of them. And so this element of play and also tapping into our nervous systems, this is where trauma-informed yoga comes in again as well, is rhythmic and repetitive movements are very soothing to our nervous systems. They can actually help our brain reprogram. So the actual act of stomping one side and then the other, or pretending to stomp and be an elephant, allowed me to experience that, to feel that, not to have the mental story associated with, oh my gosh, I'm not safe, I need to shut down. And then that really just started to change and my whole healing trajectory changed. And so I started exploring more and more. And then I taught other people how to do it. And people who had experienced life, not even necessarily the same degree of trauma that I had, found these huge releases. And so it has evolved into this play and movement. And I no longer even say that I teach trauma-informed yoga, because it has evolved into much more play and just allowing our bodies to feel in ways that feel more safe and empowered.
Mm-hmm. When you were pretending you were an elephant and doing that play, was that something that you came up with on your own, or did that? Yeah, you did.
I did. I thought in my head, I was thinking, what? I feel small and I feel weak and powerless. So mm-hmm. what is the animal that to me is big and powerful? Mm-hmm. And I thought, an elephant. Okay, I'm going to pretend like what it, see what it feels like to be an elephant. And it felt awkward. I'm not going to lie. First, when I started doing it, it felt so weird. Yeah. It felt so uncomfortable. And that's one of the big things that my clients say when I work with them is, oh my gosh, this is so uncomfortable. Yes, yes, 100% it is. Because as adults, we're trained not to play. And yet the more we can let that out and let our bodies move in ways that aren't traditional, the more healing we can have. So No, I just created a lot of this stuff out of my head. I would see an animal or I'd read a quote and I'd think, I wonder how I could do that in my body. And so then I just start to experiment and play with it and see how it manifested. And it just kind of evolved into this way of moving.
Yeah. I mean, I can actually visualize that, like being an elephant and doing that and feeling how incredibly powerful that would be, or soaring like an eagle and having that freedom. Yes. Like I feel, even when you say that, I can imagine, the emotions and the release that would come from that. But I am curious about the rhythmic part that you said is healing. Can you speak more about that?
Absolutely. So rhythmic and repetitive movements are soothing to our nervous systems. Think of how we soothe babies. We still have the same nervous system that we did as babies. So I'm actually going to give a play and a movement example. I'm glad that you brought up soaring like an eagle, because that's actually one of the ones that I go into. And so movement gives us information that we may not be able to access without that movement. So I'm going to invite you to do this with me as you're listening. You can do it seated. You can do it standing. So I'm going to invite you to start with a side-to-side sway. So I'm also going to come back to rhythmic and repetitive. So just as you sway side-to-side, start to notice what happens in your body. Notice what happens with your toes. Your gut, a lot of times when we feel tension, our gut tightens up. So do you maybe feel a release? What happens with your shoulders?
Yeah, it's super soothing.
It is soothing. Now mm-hmm. I'm going to invite you to go front to back. Mm-hmm. So start to go front to back and notice what happens. Notice the difference. So we all have one direction that feels more soothing than the other. For me, side to side is more soothing, front to back. My shoulders start to tighten. My toes start to grip into the ground. So check in with your legs, your glute muscles, all of that. In fact, see, my body just automatically, for those of you that were watching, I just automatically started to go back side to side because front to back is uncomfortable for me. And so that's where some of the movement and the information starts to come in. So think of how we soothe babies, that rhythmic and repetitive. So go with whichever direction feels most soothing for you and notice how the more you do it, what happens. My body, as I go side to side, my shoulders drop, my jaw unclenches, my toes ungrip. Now here comes the element of play. So imagine that you're now, if you're comfortable with water, you're now just floating in the water. You're like a wave going through the ocean. If you're uncomfortable with the water, because a lot of people are uncomfortable with the water, no worries. Imagine that you're a bird soaring in the air. And so whichever direction is more soothing for you, just go with that and notice what happens in your body. Start to explore. What happens with your heart? Do you feel it loosening in your heart as you find that ripple or that wave or that floating on the air, that support?
Yeah.
And so thinking of how we soothe babies, we still have that same nervous system. So things that are rhythmic and repetitive, the more we repeat them, the more our body starts to settle down, to settle in. I want to keep with the sway. So when you're done, just shake it out. Shake out.
I want to keep with it too. I'm like, oh, this is good. Right? I'm like almost falling asleep.
That's the element. So the sway is fantastic. It's the same thing when we're doing something that brings some more discomfort. So even going the direction front to back for me that feels uncomfortable gives you information. And so you start to notice, what does it feel like as you go into stress? And even though it may be uncomfortable, continuing that rhythmic and that repetitive movement starts to give you information, and your body starts to tap in, your mind and your body start to tap in together so that they can work more in synchronicity rather than fighting against each other.
Are you saying to do the one that's uncomfortable as well?
Yes, I actually recommend doing both. And the reason I recommend doing the one that's uncomfortable is because as you do the one that's uncomfortable, you start to notice what it feels like when your body is feeling tension. So you start to be able to pick up on those cues earlier and earlier, because you know that as your shoulders start to rise, you start to recognize what that feels like in a way that doesn't, you're not in full overwhelm by the time you recognize that. You start to notice it earlier and earlier and can do something to shift and change that earlier on before you go into full overwhelm or shutdown.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing you do when you pick up a baby, at least as a mom too, is the first thing you do is you start moving.
Yeah.
You start swaying, you start rocking and Yeah.
And so some of that, so the front to back versus side to side, which is more soothing. Some of my clients say the front to back reminds them of being rocked in a rocking chair. And so that one is more soothing for them. For me, side to side is more soothing. So it just is that exploration in ways that take the mental story out of it and allow you to feel that sensory information.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how do you move people out of that blockage, that head blockage, when they come in and they're embarrassed? Or are you doing more one-on-one or in groups with this?
So I offer one group class a week, and it's taught more like a yoga class. I pick a theme. We do a playful movement, hour-long class. Most of the work I do is one-on-one with clients, because that's where people can make the biggest shifts. We work with, I work with people with their own negative belief system or their own negative beliefs that they carry. So the way I move people through the discomfort is a couple of ways. We start small. Most people are very uncomfortable when we start with play, because it's something we've been told not to do as adults. Grow up, handle your shit, your stuff like an adult, all that kind of stuff. And so play is very uncomfortable. Also, we don't want to seem like we're an idiot or we're a fool, make a fool of ourselves in front of someone else, even if it is just one-on-one with me. So we start small. The sway is one of the ways that I start with people. And then depending on what someone's negative self-belief is, then we'll start to do movements around that. And so one of the other things with a trauma-informed yoga class that I have brought into my practice is you do bit peaks and valleys. You do something that's activating and then something that's soothing. So we'll do a movement that may create some discomfort, and then we'll do something, we'll come back to the sway to settle the nervous system down. And it's the rhythmic and the repetitive. So we'll do a move, or I'll have a client suggest a client do a move 2 or 3 times, or even 4 or 5 times, depending on how their nervous system is. And each time they do that move, or we do that move because I do it with them, they start to feel a little more comfortable, a little more able to be in it. And I'll give you an example. I was working with a client, and her belief is that she was unimportant, that she grew up based on childhood trauma. Her needs and her wants weren't important. And so we pretended like we were Tyrannosaurus Rex stomping around the room. And the first time that we did it, she was super tight. She wouldn't take big steps. And when I invited her to roar like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, it was just kind of a... And then after 2 or 3 or 4 times, we did it multiple times, I started to notice her body felt more comfortable. And all of a sudden she was stomping around the room and she would yell and holler as loud as she could. And so it's that the more you repeat it, the easier and easier it becomes in your body, the more trauma that we start to let go and let go of that fear of whatever's coming up.
Yeah. How does that relate? I mean, I understand how it regulates and calms the nervous system, but how does it relate to the trauma? How do you heal a trauma through the play out of that moment?
Great question. So when we experience traumatic events, our body is, and I'm going to use the term trauma. I'm going to define it as anything that overwhelms our system. So it doesn't have to be even... Yeah. child abuse, things like that. It's anything that overwhelms our system and we don't know how to process the emotions and the feelings that we're having. So I'm going to get a little bit into what's called the polyvagal theory here. So don't worry, I'm not going to take it super deep or scientific. But when we experience something that overwhelms our system, our body goes into fight or flight mode. So our body's trying to protect us. And when our body's trying to protect us, it's releasing hormones, chemical messengers, all this kind of stuff that's amping our system up, getting us ready to run or to fight. So think about a time, don't go into anything very heavy or deep, when, you know, maybe you almost tripped and you almost fell, but you didn't. You know, you felt that kind of rush of adrenaline, that rush of all that kind of stuff. That's our body preparing us to fight or to flight. It's trying to protect us. If our system gets overwhelmed and we can't handle that, we go into shutdown or freeze mode. And there are two different parts of our nervous system, the fight or flight, and then we have freeze. And freeze is where we sort of numb out. That's, we still have this swirling energy and the hormones being released, our body trying to protect us. It just numbs us out so we don't feel it. And so most people have heard of fight, flight, freeze. Right. There's a theory called the polyvagal theory that says that the portion of the nervous system that freezes in, it's called the parasympathetic, has another component called, called friend. So there's a fourth F instead of fight, flight, freeze. There's also one called friend. And so the theory is that there's two different parts to our system that causes freeze. And freeze is, kind of a very basic, we believe that harm is going to come to us, so we have to numb out. But if we can go down the other pathway in this polyvagal theory, we actually can tap into a part of our nervous system that's called friend that allows us to connect to others. And so that actually is the nerves that sit in our chest. So for those of you, if you're watching, you notice me touching my chest, it's because that's where the nerves sit. And that part of our nervous system, the freeze part, or it's called the ventral vagal, allows us to find connection with others and to find safety, and play is a really big component of tapping into that ventral vagal. And so what play does, play and movement, let me add those two together. Play and movement allows us to release that buildup of energy that happens in the fight or flight system. So like I said, you know, think about a time where you almost fell, but you didn't, all that kind of buildup of energy. And so what we do as humans, we don't like to feel that. So we stuff it down. We don't want to feel it. So we'll do things like numb out and binge watch Netflix, or maybe we'll eat, we'll use substances, anything we can do to numb out. Whereas the healthiest thing we can do is actually release that energy, deal with the hurt, and then allow that to pass. So play, when we use play, it allows us to release that energy. So stomping around like a T-Rex for my client allowed her to let go of all that hurt, all that buildup of energy around this idea that she wasn't important. And then she could sit with the pain of, oh, you know, things happened that I felt like I wasn't important, but I love me enough that I am important. So the play and the movement releases that buildup of energy, releases that buildup of the emotional itchiness and angst, so we can actually process the pain and move through it rather than keep it stuffed down and stuck inside of us.
So are you saying that they need to be able to identify the trigger or not?
No. In fact, that's one of the reasons I created this and I started working with this is I got so tired on my own healing journey of knowing what happened to me. What happened to me was so horrible. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to know anymore. And I wanted to be able to release it without having to know the trigger. And so that's one of the beautiful things of play. We get to know the negative belief that we have because we keep telling ourselves those negative beliefs all the time. Like, I have to be small. I have no value. I'm stupid, or I don't get a voice. Those types of things, you know, we're telling ourselves over and over again, but we don't have to know why. We can release that trauma. We can release that buildup of energy through play and movement and then say, oh, I feel hurt. I get to love myself and I get to let that go. You don't have to know what it is that caused it. That's the beauty of this.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. because sometimes it's too painful, or sometimes people don't even know, or sometimes it's not even necessarily important, because if we're storing trauma, we're storing it. And so it's basically an avenue of releasing trauma through somatic yes. released, right?
It is. And it's really, so trauma is that buildup of energy. I define trauma as a swirling tornado of energy trapped in a stationary body. It's that emotional itchiness that you just quite don't know how to get rid of. And so we stuff it down. And if once we can let that tornado of energy go, then we can say, oh, I feel hurt because something happened. I don't need to carry that hurt because that's not true. Or, you know, whatever it is. We don't have to know the details. In fact, yeah. I didn't want to know any more of the details, which is why I started doing this, because I got tired of knowing the details.
Yeah. Yeah. Which sometimes that hashing over the details and this talking about it and the talk therapy can be re-triggering and re-traumatizing and not necessarily healing.
We need a real, so it can be re-traumatizing because we're not finding a way to release that energy. That still is going to bring up all those emotions, all that trapped energy inside. And if we don't have a way to release that, we just keep stuffing it down. And so absolutely yeah. it can be re-traumatizing.
And so in nature, what do animals do to release trauma?
One of the biggest things that animals do to release trauma is they shake it out. So animals in, the wild have traumatic experiences. Think of a lion chasing a gazelle for dinner. The gazelle gets away. That was a traumatic experience. Their fight or flight system got activated. And what animals do is they shake it off. They shake their arms. They shake their legs. They do this, what's called discharge of energy. So that's actually something that I do, that I recommend my clients do. And in fact, if you noticed after we did the sway, I recommended shake it out because that shaking of energy is a way to discharge that all the hormones, the chemical messengers, all that energy from fight or flight.
Yeah. It's so funny that I'm talking to you today because this past weekend I did a workshop and I had all this stuff in my body. I can't tell you what it was, but I did a lot of shaking and it was a side to side shake because, and like you'd said that I think that's mine, is side to side and not front to back. And it was shaking things off and it was so intense and I shook for I think 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I was just shaking, shaking, shaking. It was really, really intense. I have no idea what it was, but I felt like this dark energy that needed to be pulled out and released out of my body. And it didn't have a story. It didn't need a story. I didn't need to understand the story. Although my head kept trying to like wrap the story around it. Like, what is this? And like, what am I releasing? But it was really, it was tons and tons and tons of heavy energy. And that wasn't serving me. And I couldn't believe the amount of shaking that I did and releasing that I did. And when it was done, when kind of everything settled and it was like a rave, it was like a really intense ripple. And then at the end, there was like almost like an aftershock or something that was going through my body. At the end, I felt so much lighter. There was even in my body, there feels like there's space where I didn't notice that space before. And then I had this profound like thought that I can't even believe that I was holding all of that in, like all of that. It was almost like a toxic energy that was trapped and it released and it was wild. It was something that I really can't, understand or explain, or, and it doesn't even matter. It's not even important. But it's cool that I'm talking to you now because it was like, whoa, like all of that crap was in me and now it's gone. And there's space and openness and space for more positivity.
That actually is, my therapist calls it the protest response. That's what our body would have wanted to do if it could have done what it needed in those traumatic experiences. So that actually is what I work to get my clients to do through play and movement, because that is an ultimate release. That discharge of energy is so powerful and so profound. Once people can find it and by whatever means to get to that, it just opens your whole world up. No, that actually is, when I work with clients, that's the goal, is to get them to the point where their body can actually start to do that in ways that feel safe.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
I mean, it was intense. I'm not going to lie. It was intense. And it was in at moments, it was, thank goodness I had support. It was a little bit overwhelming. And there was a sense like, oh, I need to get it out. I need to get it out. Even sometimes when I wanted to ground and make it stop, I just kind of let it keep flowing. It was wild. It was wild to know that that was all stuck.
It is. And once you release it, all of a sudden you think, how in the world was I surviving with that? Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does give me, it almost gives me permission now. Like I have another tool in my toolbox. So if somebody cuts me off in traffic, I can just shake it out.
Yes.
You know, I can just release it. And that I know that I have that tool to do it in the moment, kind of like an animal would, right? We do it in that moment and then it doesn't stick.
Yes. I am going to say, for those deep releases, like what you had, I highly recommend having someone, for anybody listening at home, I highly recommend having someone there to guide you.
Yes.
You can get trapped in those. And I will tell you from personal experience, when I started doing this work, I would put myself into those discharges and then I couldn't get out. And so I would have to call my therapist curled in the fetal position, sobbing because I couldn't get out of that.
Yeah.
So a little like shake and discharge and traffic is great. When you're looking to do those really big, deep emotional discharges that feel overwhelming, have a guide, have someone there with you, someone who can guide you out of that. Because it's really easy to get stuck in those. I did it multiple times.
Yeah, I feel like that because I remember thinking like, oh my God, is there going to be an end to this? And like, holy shit, this is a lot. And having that support was to have somebody accept me exactly as I was in that moment and to not judge it and to allow that to flow through me while supporting me and standing there and being like a solid foundation was key. I don't actually even know if I could have gone there on my own.
It's incredibly challenging. So I am going to, whether it's me with play, whether it's Nikki with yoga, with whatever it is, have a guide there with you because it is incredibly, it can be really overwhelming to your system. And our instinct is to shut it down. So having someone there is key when you start learning how to do this and tapping into that sensory somatic work.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's such a freedom afterwards.
There is.
There's such an openness and a freedom and like spaciousness inside where that was being held with some kind of negative.
Yeah.
Negativity.
Yeah. And pain and angst and despair. Those are my words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you work with people online?
I do. In fact, most of what I do is virtual. I work with most clients virtually.
Yeah. And I wonder if sometimes that even feels better that somebody's in the safety of their own space that's comfortable.
That's one of the reasons I do that is because people can have their own safety, security things around them, their own feeling of comfort. Because when you're working with trauma, and once again, it doesn't even have to be trauma like child abuse like I experienced. It can be anything that overwhelms your system. Having those things that bring you comfort around makes it much easier to tap into that heaviness.
Yeah. And I feel like, and I like your definition of trauma because it doesn't have to be some big, horrible thing. It can be little layers. And I feel like when we don't release that, then it's like a tiny layer that comes in and another tiny layer and another tiny layer. And then, you know, you look back 5 years, you know, before and you were so much lighter and brighter and freer. And all of a sudden it was just this slow, slow, slow layering. And so I want to also highlight the importance of continuing to work on ourselves because it's not ever done. We don't ever complete it. And then life has a slow way of like layering little things. Like somebody says something and it just a little hurt. And then somebody else says something that's a little hurt. And then you get it cut off on traffic. And then, you know, there's something that happens that's unfair and it just slowly layers and we don't even realize it.
And just the way that our nervous systems are created and built, we're going to go through ups and downs. Always. That's even when we breathe, when we take a breath in, our body goes into fight or flight. When we breathe out, our body goes into the rest and digest or the friend portion of our nervous system. And so we are constantly flowing through it. When we do trauma work, instead of having these big peaks and these big valleys, it becomes more like a wave and you're able to navigate those ups and downs with much more ease rather than big peak, big valley, big peak, big valley. So just know there's never an end point to being healed. It just is, you're able to navigate with much more ease.
Yeah, it gets easier. Yeah. I mean, practice. You practice and then it gets easier and then it's not as daunting. I'm curious if you use the breath work in that practice.
I have done enough work around breath work that I know that for me, I can do breath work if I'm moving. When I have to be still and stationary, I can't do breath work. That's still very triggering. Mm-hmm. And when I work with clients, I give them the option based on what their nervous system is. If they feel more comfortable sitting and doing breath work, I'll sit and do it with them, but I'll add a little sway in for my body because I have to have some sort of movement in order for my nervous system to regulate. So I typically don't do just straight breath work. I'll oftentimes add movement into it, and I'll only do breath work if it's someone who finds comfort with that.
Yeah. What do you think the connection is with the work that you're doing in the inner child? Because I feel like we are really disconnected from our inner child, myself included. I'm learning to build that relationship through this process that I'm going through now. And so it's almost like sometimes we're taught to be logical and to be practical and not to have play and not to have fun and to be serious and to tap into that childlike aspect of play. It seems like it would connect us to our inner child. And I feel like a lot of us have a big disconnection.
It absolutely does. And it does it actually in more than one way. A lot of the negative beliefs that we carry about ourselves, the negative thoughts that we have, come from childhood wounds. One of my clients, I'm thinking in particular, her negative belief was that I'm stupid. And that was based off her dad telling her that for many, many years. And so when we're able to release a lot of that stored trauma, stored energy around it, we're able to look at those negative beliefs, we actually get to heal that wounded inner child. So we get to say to that little wounded part of ourselves, oh, no, you aren't stupid. Now you get to do whatever you want instead of carrying the burden of believing that you're stupid or whatever the belief is that, right, that you're carrying. Mine is I'm worthless. So instead of that wounded inner child having to carry the belief that I'm worthless. And so anytime something happens that even gets close to this belief that I'm worthless, that little inner child gets activated. Instead they get to twirl and do circles and dance and, you know, do whatever they want to do. They don't have to carry that burden of the negative belief anymore. And mm-hmm. So not only are we tapping into the creativity and the imagination of being a child, we're actually healing those wounds that come from childhood. Most of those negative beliefs we carry come from childhood.
Yeah. And then there's this lightness that comes out of all of that.
Yes. And there's a freedom. That comes.
And I'm sure people can pick up on that lightness versus that heavy energy that we sometimes carry.
Yes. Yes. There's so much freedom. I one time heard trauma defined as the loss of imagination. And I can't remember who said it, so I can't give them credit for it. But if you think of trauma as the loss of imagination, think of children. They have such wonderful imaginations. They, you know, get to create this amazing world that they live in. And so by releasing whatever the degree of trauma it is that you carry, you get to tap into that childlike wonder and bring that imagination back.
Yeah. And I'd like to add that we want to encourage that in our kids, because I've got an almost 10-year-old and he's got the most crazy, wild, beautiful imagination. And there's something that happens, I don't know, in middle school, I don't know where it is, where all of a sudden it's not that an imagination isn't honored anymore. And then our kids lose touch with that. And so I'm kind of curious what we could do to manifest that in our children or nurture that in our children.
I say play and movement. Stomp around like elephants with them, you know, add some sort of movement and play, because that allows them to see that A, it's okay to be silly as a grown up. B, it gives them that release of whatever the negative beliefs are that are, you know, they're hearing things from their peers or from their teachers or from everyone else that they need to be more responsible or more serious. So I'd say play and movement is the answer to everything.
Yeah. I love that. I love this angle because I think everyone's walking around with trauma, if they believe it or not. I do. And it doesn't have to be a sexual abuse. It doesn't have to be a physical abuse. It doesn't have to be emotional abuse. It can be just kind of life, layering of life. And so I feel like if people don't think they have it, they're wrong. They do. I think
everybody has trauma. So I'm working from that perspective that all of us do. You know, mm-hmm. somebody says something mean to you in middle school and you don't quite know how to handle it. We all have trauma, whether we realize it or not.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you create that art project and your, you know, elementary school teacher tells you it's a piece of crap and that the sky is supposed to be blue. And all of a sudden your creativity gets squashed and there's that piece of your personality that gets squashed. That's trauma, even though it, you know, it's like a psyche trauma.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We all carry those wounds and that trauma because we don't know how to process things always as children.
Yeah.
And so tapping into that wonder, that play, that movement is so healing and so beneficial.
Yeah. And they've done so, I mean, there's so much proof that somatic releases are healing. And so you're kind of adding play and somatic release in together to heal.
Yes.
Yeah.
For me, I tried somatic experiencing. I started working with a somatic experience certified practitioner. And for those of you that don't know what somatic experiencing is it's a very particular way of doing feeling into sensory information from your body. And I got overwhelmed. The sensory information was too much for me. I couldn't handle it. And so the play, because it brought up too many sensory trauma experiences that I had as a child. So the play allows to disconnect from the story associated with the sensory information coming in. That's why play became so powerful for me.
Yeah. I love this. I love this.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah. Is there anything that else you want to share that we haven't touched on? I love this. I love this angle. It doesn't seem as scary. It doesn't seem as daunting.
The message that I love to leave people with is healing doesn't have to be heavy. And so a lot of times, one of the things that stops many of us from starting on our healing journey is we're afraid of how painful it's going to be. And it doesn't have to be heavy. We get to live our lives with freedom and with fun and with joy. And play and movement is one of the ways that we can do that without tapping into the heaviness.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. So how do people connect with you if they would like to connect with you? I'm going to drop all the links in the show notes, but how can people connect with you and what are your offerings?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best way is through my website and it's AngieBarrettMovement.com. And I do spell my last name differently. I spell it B-E-R-R-E-T-T. So it's AngieBarrettMovement.com. And that has all my contact info, my phone number, my email, my social medias. And I do have some playful movements on my social medias. So if you're wanting to see what it might be like, I do have some on there. I do also on my website offer a free short, less than 5 minute movement sequence for when you feel like you are going to lose your cool. And it is less than 5 minutes. It allows you to let some of that steam out. And then if you're interested in working with me one-on-one, there's an option to book a free play to heal call with me where I give you, we go through some movements. We talk about what you're looking for. I show you what it would feel like. And then we can talk about how play and movement can help you heal.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I want to thank you so much for your time and for sharing your wisdom and for sharing your story and for opening up with us. I really appreciate you and having you here today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Nikki. I really appreciate it.
That was great. Thank you for listening to the Connected Community Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please like, share, and subscribe. I can be found at www.nikkiyyoga.com, NikkiYyoga.com. Until I see you again next week, I hope you have a beautiful day.